Happy Monday, Nashville. Welcome in, Chase and Michelle. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in today for Chase McCabe. Nick Kieser with us on the ones and the twos. We are live from our game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. And if you want to watch us streaming, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. And also, we have a question of the day. We like to do these on the show. With just over, you know, over a week and a half-ish out of the draft, what is the optimism with Tennessee Titans fans right now? How are you looking at what they've done in free agency, what they've done in the draft as they head into rookie minicamp soon, OTAs? We heard from Ryan Tannehill last week. We heard from Chika Conquo, Aaron Brewer, some of the veteran guys on this team now. So what does your optimism look like right now on May 8th? As we have rookie minicamp coming, text us, call us, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll be taking your answers all show long. Junie, I was off Friday. You filled in for me. Now back in the saddle today. Happy Monday. How are we doing today?
Doing real good. We had a very productive weekend this weekend. Our wife's family came in town. Nice. Had an absolutely great time with them. They're going to be heading out today. So jam-packed weekend. You know, a lot of house cleaning. So I don't know. I'm feeling really organized, refreshed, and I think the only downside to today is the weather, the gloominess over Nashville and all the storms that have been going on. So,
well, it's funny. You know, I get here about 5-ish a.m. every morning, and usually
probably looks the same outside.
I walked out to go to the break room, and I turned, and it was about 7:45, and I'm like, why isn't the sun come up? It came up yet. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, everybody who was at that Taylor Swift concert, it ended at about 2 a.m. last night because of the rain
delay. Oh, so she
did
perform.
Yeah. I woke up this morning. I was unsure. But she basically took over Nashville this weekend. And I saw that the end of the concert ended up being at about 2 a.m. last night.
I evaded downtown at all cost. I was not going to get mixed in with the Swifties. My sister actually came down from Bowling Green and went to the Saturday show, and she was talking to me about, you know, how, you know, insane this fan group is, like friendship bracelets, and they argue over their friendship bracelets and training. I was like, listen, if I'm downtown in a traffic jam full of Swifties and I got two girls arguing over bracelets, I think I'm gonna lose my mind. So I avoided it. I'm glad everybody was safe. And I mean, she set records for attendance this past weekend. Yeah. So good for Taylor Swift on coming back to, you know, where she got her big start. And, you know, shout out to all the girls and fellas out there that went to the show and enjoyed. So, I mean, it's good for the city to have a big concert like that.
It was a big weekend in Nashville. Oprah was in town for TSU's graduation. Apparently, people saw Coach O running on the walking bridge in Nashville.
He called into the show this morning, didn't he, Michelle?
Janet Jackson was here on Thursday. I mean, Nashville was, what a weekend. And as sports kind of start to thin out, you know, we just always have a lot going on in Nashville. So it's always a great city to be in, always eventful here. But, you know, speaking of, we got the NHL playoffs, we got the NBA playoffs. Junie, I don't know if you had a chance to watch any of the Celtics 76ers game last night. Game went into overtime. James Harden with the late three. Well, first off, late floater. They tie it before they head into overtime. But then the late three to seal the deal for the 76ers. That series is tied with 2-2, Celtics and 76ers. And then the Suns actually tie the series last night. Devin Booker shooting 79% from the floor, averaging 41 points. Just an incredible performance by him and Kevin Durant. They also tied the series with the Denver Nuggets at 2-2.
Yeah, no, excellent basketball all around yesterday. What was crazy about the Denver Nuggets in the Suns game was Jokic, after game three, basically challenged Devin Booker, says, oh, he's not going to do it again. And what does he go out and do? He does it again. So yeah. I was very doubtful with the Suns without Chris Paul. You know, wherever Chris Paul has gone, he has elevated that team. The Suns were not a true contender until he got there. And it's been that way with every single stop, like the OKC years where Chris Paul was there. No one thought that they were going to be good, and he elevated the game. He did it with James Harden when they were in Houston. They made a bunch of conference finals. So the Suns and Devin Booker going to that next level with Kevin Durant and them still staying on track without really the facilitator on offense, I thought was amazing. But really the story of the day yesterday for me was seeing James Harden bringing one of the victims of the Michigan State shooting that mm-hmm. got paralyzed. He was a survivor. And James Harden says that, you know, this kid is my good luck charm. He's a huge James Harden fan. Got you know, brought to the game, got James Harden's shoes, and he signed them. And, you know, that was an awesome story for a kid that, you know, obviously had his whole life ahead of him and hit with tragedy like that, you know, for James Harden to do that for him. And, you know, it's something that he's never going to forget. That meant a lot to me to see him go out of his way to do that. So great basketball yesterday, great storylines. And any time that you see a bunch of series getting knotted up at 2-2 going into the final stretch is always great in the NBA playoffs.
I'm happy you brought up that James Harden story, because I remember when that tragic shooting happened at Michigan State. James Harden, he got to talk on the phone with the student who was a victim of that. And then to see the pictures and videos of him on the court and James Harden giving him his shoes after he had, you know, a historic performance, has the basket to seal the deal to go into overtime, and then has the game-winning basket. Just a great, great moment to see from them. And then we got the Miami Heat. They are up 2-1 on the Knicks. They'll play tonight. The Knicks will try to tie up that series. And then the Lakers and the Warriors, the game will be in L.A. Warriors looking to tie up that series as well. The Lakers look good, Junie. And also, random news that came out of this weekend, Bronny James commits to USC.
No, I mean, that was a little bit unexpected to me. Mm-hmm. I just figured that he was going to go to Ohio State and go back to kind of like the hometown, because LeBron always said that, you know, if he were to play in college, that he was going to go there. And I thought that, you know, Bronny would have wanted to make a splash, maybe not go to like a perennial basketball school and go there. So I was really expecting him to commit to Ohio State. So, you know, he wanted to stay home, wants to stay close to dad. Totally get that.
Hey, he's probably going to be on the Lakers soon enough, right?
I think LeBron has it to where his contract is structured mm-hmm. that he'll be a free agent when Bronny gets drafted. And I think he's gone out and said that, you know, I want to play with my son.
He has.
And I'm going to go wherever my son gets drafted. And I think that that's really cool. And I saw something, and again, I have no idea what the odds are or how this is going to play out, but apparently a bunch of Cleveland fans think that, like, Cleveland has some good odds to be able to land Bronny James.
Oh, that would be wild.
And that would be an amazing storyline for LeBron and his son to play in LeBron's home state in Cleveland, where, you know, he brought a championship to. So that would be really, really cool. So interesting stuff. And I just think, you know, maybe Bronny James isn't going to be the best basketball player. A lot of people say he's, you know, overhyped just because of his dad's name mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But still, he is a really good ball player, and he still is a perennial top 100 player. And it's just going to bring some more excitement to college basketball and some more narrative. So it's always good for the sport.
I know there's one texter who texted in a couple weeks ago. They said they got the Lakers to win it all at, I think, plus 8,000 odds right before the play, or right at the trade deadline when Russell Westbrook went to the Clippers and they added some more role players. So I'm rooting for that listener on our show. Switching to the NHL playoffs, I just think this is really funny. The Panthers up 3-0 on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yo, shout out to you. You called that. I'll give you your props. You called that.
Listen, you knew it was a recipe for disaster when the Maple Leafs survived their series and the Panthers beat the Bruins, and then the Maple Leafs were the betting favorites to win it all. I thought, oh, no. I thought, this is not good for Toronto, Junie.
Michelle,
is not good.
Can you name the goaltender that plays for the Florida Panthers?
No.
Okay.
No. I can't hear it. No.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to let you know that he is someone that has won a Vezina trophy, and he's been absolutely nowhere this entire season, and now he's come back into his Vezina trophy form at the weirdest time. So,
perfect time, right?
Oh, I mean, yeah, perfect for the Florida Panthers, but like, I mean, this is a team that won the President's Trophy last season, and that curse obviously stuck with the Bruins this year. So the Panthers were on the flip side of things this year, but they had a great game last night. That was probably one of the most fun games I've ever watched in the postseason this season alone.
I think the Florida Panthers are my new favorite team. They've been a very fun team to watch, as Nick just said. When we had Greg Wyshynski on last week, you know, he talked about them. They were the President's Trophy team last year. They didn't have a big playoff run, and now this year kind of underrated heading into the playoffs, right? We're talking about the Eastern Conference, the Bruins. We're talking about just Tampa always in there. And then if, on the West, the Avs, right? Some of those big powerhouse teams. But Florida was a team who did win the President's Trophy last year and have been consistent and are really peaking at the right time.
They needed help, too, to get in. Like, Pittsburgh had the wild card locked down, and they choked, losing to two of the worst teams in the league in order for Florida to just get into the playoffs. So it took a Pittsburgh Penguins choke job in order for the Panthers to get in, and they've been seizing their opportunity. But another team in the NHL playoffs that I feel like is not being talked about enough is the expansion team, the Seattle Kraken from last season. And what do you know? Well, who is their fourth leading scorer in the playoffs this season? Oh, it happens to be Elli Tolvanen, the player the Preds just let the league go out and get. And I feel like we got a good sample size now to kind of see that Elli Tolvanen is really kind of seizing his opportunity and playing much better in his new role. So I feel like that is kind of a subtle storyline and a big mistake maybe that the Predators made, you know, giving up on a young player a little bit too early.
Well, and the Kraken got him on waivers, too. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Looks like we have Daryl wants to weigh in on the Florida Panthers. Morning, Daryl.
Hey, morning, folks. His name is Sergei Bobrovsky. That's the...
Yes.
We also call him Big Game Bob. This team, there's Brad Marchand from the Boston Bruins after we dispatched Boston in 7 games. There's a new rat in the NHL, and his name's Matthew Tkachuk. That was the big money move that Ed Zito did on last year, trading him to Calgary for Jonathan Huberdeau. He brings grit. He brings a mean streak. He brings energy. He brings a mouth. He's got a mouth on him. But he is what that team needed to ignite Alexander Barkov and the rest of the crew. They had a lot of injuries in the regular season, plus that big trade because Huberdeau had been there for, I guess, about 9 or 10 years, so they were used to that pace of play with him. But Tkachuk has just proven himself to be on another level. If you had told me that they would be up 3-0 in the Toronto Maple Leafs, I was about to say Blue Jays, excuse me, but 3-0, I would have said, I don't really think so. You know, they might give them a series, but we'll see what happens. But if you had told me they'd be one victory away from winning this series, I'd have thought, well, you're a little nuts. But they played a lot of exciting hockey in the playoffs. Game 7 against they've come back from behind. They came back from, I think it was 2-0 down against Boston in Game 7, tied it up at the last minute and then won it 2 minutes into overtime. This is team excitement. I invite people to watch them because they're coming, they're gelling. They look good.
They do. Thanks, Daryl. And Matthew Tkachuk, if I'm not mistaken, last year we had some conversations on this airwaves about maybe the Nashville Predators getting him. Looks like it worked out for the Florida Panthers. Coming up next, Junie and I are going to switch gears into the Tennessee Titans. And who wants to win Beach Boys tickets? We have got a trivia question all on the other side. You're listening to Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.
What comes to mind when you view Will Levis?
You know, it's a shame we couldn't see Will Levis with Liam Cohen for, you know, 2 straight years like that. You know, Liam left to go to the Rams, and actually now he's back in Kentucky. But, you know, the offense just did not look anything remotely the same this year. And part of that is a turnover on the offensive line. No Wandale Robinson. And I think people need to realize Will Levis was getting shots before every game just so he could go out there and physically play. Most quarterbacks would not have played, especially, you know, guys that are top prospects. Will Levis, he was, you know, whatever you need me to get, give me shots, whatever it is, get me on the field. That's just his mentality. And so I think, you know, that's something that coaches really respect. The intelligence factor is off the charts. It's just you wish he saw things a little bit quicker and he was more consistent with his feet and how that affected his accuracy. So, but there's a lot of things that you just check the box, both physically and then again, the toughness factor, the intelligence. So it's not really a stretch. You don't have to squint to understand why teams are very encouraged by Will Levis, what he could be at the next level with the whole package of tools that he offers.
That was Dane Brugler prior to the NFL draft describing Will Levis and what he could look like in the NFL someday. Welcome back in, Chase and Michelle. Michelle Knezevic, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe. Nick Kieser with us bumping the T-Swift as she took over Nashville this weekend. Discussing Will Levis and discussing what the quarterback room will look like for the Tennessee Titans next year. And, you know, Junie, I think the biggest question that fans, people who watch this team, people who cover the NFL, is when a team drafts a quarterback that high in the NFL draft, they ended up actually getting Will Levis in the second round. They traded up in the second round to get him, but a guy who was viewed as a first-round prospect for the majority of his college season and heading into the NFL draft. Talked about with the C.J. Strouds, Bryce Youngs, all of that. Is it clear now that after the Tennessee Titans did that, we saw what they did in free agency, no splashy moves, and then you hear from Ryan Tannehill just last week for the first time. He's here for OTAs, which traditionally, you know, we don't see Ryan Tannehill around this time. Usually he's a guy who comes a little bit later after rookie minicamp, but he was able to talk to the media, and of course this is going to be the question again. The question again is going to be like, well, they draft a quarterback again. Last year it was Malik Willis. This year it's Will Levis. And he gave the general answers of, well, just going to hopefully he adds to the room and he had a good college career. I mean, you're not going to expect him to say anything drastic, especially after last year. People crucified him for the mentor comment that went viral for no absolute reason. But, Junie, I look at this team and I think, are the Tennessee Titans, Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon, telling us what they are doing? Are they telling us that, you know, we're not trying to win next year based off the moves that they've made? You know, the draft, not addressing the wide receiver position, not addressing the wide receiver position in free agency. And if the room stays like this heading into training camp and there's no other significant move, a move that moves the needle for this team, something that is a Mike Evans trade from Tampa or DeAndre Hopkins, something to that magnitude, do you think that they've showed us that we're going to ride out this year, we're going to ride out the contracts, but we're turning the page?
I do think that's what they're doing, and I think it's only logical to see that. You know, the offensive line is patchwork at best. You know, you're hoping that these guys can live up to the potential that they can. Like Andre Dillard, you know, former first-round pick, he got beat out in Philly. Philly is one of the best offensive lines. We would like to hope that he can come into Tennessee with a fresh start, a much weaker offensive line room, and seize that opportunity. Brunskill, he was a starter in 2020 and 2021, but he got replaced this past year. So what is he going to do to kind of, you know, revamp his career? Aaron Brewer, you know, he's never started at center before. Is he going to, you know, take this and be better, and is that more of a suitable position for him? We don't know. And then you brought up the wide receiver position. It's absolutely awful. And I think this is a really telltale sign that they're kind of waiting and realizing that it's going to be really tough for them to be able to compete this year. Because they didn't go out. I mean, they could have reached for a guy in free agency, in the draft. They could have done that. But this free agency class was not really good at all. I mean, the headliner was Juju Smith-Schuster. Mecole Hardman. I mean, that's not really moving the page much either. Again, that's an upgrade for this team.
Yep.
But do, like, you're paying Juju Smith-Schuster in New England, you know, I think it's over $10 million a year. I think so. I think it was around $11 million. I could be wrong on that. But with all that being said, and them not drafting a guy, and this draft class wasn't, you know, as talented as years before either, and probably isn't going to be as talented this year. I see it as they didn't want to overpay for anybody. They didn't want to make any long-term commitments. Their veteran superstars, Kevin Byard, Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, are all getting to the end of their contracts. They're all getting a little bit older. And they just don't want to get stuck And I think where this team was when Rand Carthon took over was just not in a great situation. And they're trying to do it to where they don't get tied down by mediocrity. And if they need to really turn the page and flip the script, that they can do that quicker rather than trying to, you know, forcefully win now with this core when this core has reached its peak.
So Peter King came out with his post-draft thoughts and what next season could look like in his takeaways. And this is what he put for Tennessee. Feels like the Titans are a slow start from Will Levis playing by November 1st, selling Derrick Henry by the trade deadline, and building for 2024.
I mean, yeah. that's essentially what it is. I don't necessarily want to see Derrick Henry go. You know, he's still got, you know, gas left in the tank. He can still play at a really high level, and I think for what he's done for this Titans team, you know, a running back that can carry a team to an AFC championship is special, and you don't see that in today's game.
Well, he's generational.
I would hate to see him go. The guy that I most likely could see getting traded or moved off of even before the season is still Kevin Byard. The more I think about it, the more I see the draft capital for the future. You know, they need to really build up this team. And what's a non-premier position that they have a solid player in? That's a safety position with Kevin. They've already tied down Amani Hooker for the foreseeable future. And I just think that Kevin Byard, even though as well as he played last year, as much of a leader as he is, the Titans don't have a lot of draft capital to really replenish this roster. And they're going to have to do something in order to do that. Reports have been coming out that apparently the Titans may or may not have shopped Ryan Tannehill, and that there just wasn't a real, you know, good suitor and a real good return for him. And I don't think that they would, you know, just give up on him for, you know, pennies on the dollar. I think they really want to get some value. And I think the only value that you could really get is Kevin Byard, free up the money, get a couple draft picks in order to really get some new guys in here. And I want to try and find something that's hopeful for this team and that fans could grasp and be excited for, but it's really bleak right now. And I challenge Titans fans, because I've been hearing a lot of, you know, they're going to win, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 wins this year. And I'm like, what position group outside of the front seven are you confident in that's going to lead you to do that? That's what I'm trying to find here, is what is so promising about this team going into the season.
And to your Kevin Byard point, his cap hit this year is $19.6 million. And actually, this came out on an Instagram account, the Game Day NFL. Most interceptions since 2015. Kevin Byard tied for third with Justin Simmons at 27. So since 2015, tied for third with the most interceptions in the league. So, you know, he is a guy who's older at that position, but he still has value. He still has a lot of value at that position. Cap hit 19.6 this year, cap hit 17.8 next year. Along with guys with huge cap hits, you know, we talk about Derrick Henry and we talk about Ryan Tannehill, but next year with both of those two, Henry and Derrick, being in their last year this year, you know, what is the concern level for them heading into their contract year with the Tennessee Titans, probably knowing that this will be their last year wearing the two-tone blue? Texas, call us all show long, 615-737-1025. What is your optimism level like heading into this season for the Tennessee Titans? How do you feel about Will Levis? Taking all your thoughts, text and call 615-737-1025 on Chase Michelle, 1025-1063, The Game. Chase Michelle, 1025-1063, The Game. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe today. We got Nick Kieser on our ones and our twos. Talking a little Tennessee Titans, where do you see this team heading into next season? What is the temperature of the fan base? How optimistic do you feel about the draft picks they've made for the future of this team? How optimistic do you feel about the new general manager, Mike Vrabel, the new stadium coming in just a couple years, expected to be open in 2027. Text us, call us 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A texter texts in, they don't name their name, but they said, if Tannehill gets cut post-June 1, it saves about $27 million. That's a lot in cap space. Which, Junie, that's been something that you've been bringing up. I mean, you brought it up when Tannehill was hurt in the middle of last season when they started going on that losing streak. And you thought, okay, you know, this would be the time because although he has one more year left and he has a high cap hit, you know, you actually could save a lot if you cut him post-June 1.
Yes, and there's a lot of pros and cons mm-hmm. to that. I don't think the Titans will, but there is definitely a benefit to doing it.
So and give us a pros and a cons list. So pros, obviously cap space is number one.
Cap space is number one, and it really just kind of solidifies the direction of the team. Because mm-hmm. right now, you know, when you have Ryan Tannehill, you have Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, you're still saying that this core is still kind of going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that they have the capability with what they have on this roster right now to compete in the AFC with the way it is. Let's say if the Titans and their roster moved over to the NFC, it's a different conversation because
mm-hmm.
I feel like they could, you know, easily behind Henry and this young core on offense, if things fell into place the right way, they could definitely compete against some of those rosters. But with how stacked the AFC is, and even some of the teams like the Raiders and the Steelers who don't have like prominent QBs in the AFC right now, they still have really good rosters. So it's just going to be tough for the Titans when you don't have an elite quarterback and you don't have an elite roster to compete with how stacked this AFC is. So moving off Ryan Tannehill, I think, you know, it would send the message of the direction the team is going. It would let them go young. They probably would be up for, you know, a better draft pick the following year, which is going to be a really talented draft.
Mm-hmm.
You would give, you know, likely Will Levis, you know, give him reps his rookie year. He only has 4 years on his contract since he was drafted in the second round. Kind of get him going sooner rather than later. And he could also play with Derrick Henry. And then I feel like, you know, a rookie's best friend is a good running game. And what better running game than have, you know, the best running back of this generation playing with you? The cons of it is, in a perfect situation, I would like to see Ryan Tannehill start the season and Will Levis take over in the middle of the year. I think that is what would be best because, in all likelihood, I believe this team is going to struggle this season.
And with Ryan Tannehill.
Even with Tannehill. I feel like they're going to struggle. And if that transition could happen in the middle of the season and Will Levis comes in and the pressure's not all on him because the team's in a downward trajectory and he's kind of coming in, that could kind of be like a boost to this roster. You know, typically when rookies come in, guys want to play harder for him mm-hmm. in order for him to, you know, have the best chance to get a start because, you know, the way you start in the NFL is a big deal.
Kind of like the Steelers with Kenny Pickett last year when he officially took over the role. I mean, you watched that, right? They had Mitch and Trubisky and, you know, things just weren't really meshing, obviously. TJ Watt got hurt and then the team got a spark late last season and actually almost got into the playoffs with Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, I mean, they were a Jets win away in week 18 in order to get in. So it's good for rookies to sit, and it's good for them to learn. And I think Ryan Tannehill is a great professional. I think he's great with his prep work. It's just he just doesn't have that upside. And I think in a perfect world this year, you want to see Treylon Burks take a step. You want to see Kyle Phillips, Chig Okonkwo take a step. And in a perfect world, you know, the offensive line, you know, all the potential that you see out of these guys that haven't gotten opportunities in other places like San Francisco and Philadelphia that have outstanding offensive lines
mm-hmm.
that they play at a very serviceable level. So that is the pros and cons. I think it would be good for Will Levis to sit and learn for a little bit, but for the direction of the team in going forward, it would not shock me too much if they did cut Tannehill June 1st.
So we got a text on the text line I want to address. Alex from Montreal. I want to see them give Levis the keys and see what he has. He came from a pro-ready offense. If it works, great. If not, you possibly have a shot to get a top elite quarterback next draft. Okay, listen. if the Tennessee Titans then again drafted another quarterback for the third year in a row after they, you know, moved up in the second round and lost draft, I mean, that.
I mean, it'd basically be 3-2-1 franchise.
I have a feeling Mike Vrabel would not be the coach.
But they're not. They're not. I mean, that is at it that way.
I also don't think it's fair to look at it that way. I mean, look at how many years it took Josh Allen to be a successful quarterback in this mm-hmm. league. I also think, too, if you see the potential in a guy and you're drafting him because you believe that, hey, he can be our franchise quarterback, that you can't just give him 1 year and be like, oh, okay, well, yep, no, he's not good, so we're just going to move out. We're going to move off you, dude.
Josh Allen was horrible in 2018. Like, he was horrible.
Yeah, and it's not rare to see a quarterback bad when they start. But I also think, too, you know, it's a position where you saw the potential and they're not going to get it when they just step right on the field. And if he doesn't work out in the first year, I mean, I don't think it's fair to move off of. I think the Malik Willis situation was different considering he was a third round pick. And it was almost like just getting a waiver on a quarterback and seeing what you have in him because – you know, you looked at his arm talent, you looked at his quickness, his athleticism, but, you know, moving up in the second round to get a guy just two spots out of the first round who was viewed as a solid first round pick, I mean, that's a lot different than in the third round looking at your board and saying, oh, well, you know Ryan Tannehill's getting older. Yeah, let's take a waiver on this guy.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's much different when you pick somebody and you trade up for them. And again, you know, they traded up to get Malik Willis in the third round at 86. But 33 and 86 are completely different. And when you look at some of the names of quarterbacks that have been drafted in the second round, I mean, you're talking about like your Jimmy G's, your Derek Carr's. Like, decent quarterbacks have come out of those positions. So, clearly, when you draft a quarterback 2 years in a row.
Drew Brees, right?
Yeah, no, Drew Brees, he was yeah, I actually think he was drafted 33rd as well. 33rd or 34th, something like that. But
32nd, second round.
32nd?
Yeah, so it must have been a year that somebody
got vacated of their
– yep.
Interesting. But
so similar position.
Right? Either way, I like Levis, and I've been high on him from the jump. I think when it comes to kind of comparing him and what Malik Willis did, I mean, Levis played in a pro-style offense. He played in the SEC. He played for Kentucky, which is one of the worst football programs in the SEC. And that's not – I'm not trying to throw shade. I'm being honest. Like, Kentucky is a basketball school. They don't get the big recruits like your Alabamas, your LSUs, your Georgias.
Even your Tennessees.
Exactly. Like, I really think that, you know, look at the circumstance. Look at all the turnover, coaching, personnel, injury, everything. This guy, and especially with all the doubt and him sliding in the draft – he's a guy that's going to have a huge chip on his shoulder, and I think that he's going to come in and play a lot better than what people think.
And so over the weekend, I was doing some more research, right, on Kentucky's team last year. But to be honest, I mean, everybody knows, if you listen to this station, that I am a alum. I'm a Kentucky fan. And the season started off really strong last year. I mean, they started off 5-0, heading to Ole Miss. And something I didn't realize was that game came down to the last play. Will's offense wasn't set, and it ended up being a touchdown, but then it was taken back because they weren't set. He had a broken rib in that game and turf toe, which he got in that game. He was playing with a broken rib. So when you talk about a guy, I mean, we talk about just from a character standpoint, I mean, I think of a guy like Jeffrey Simmons who broke down towards the end of the season saying that, you know, he was playing on his ankle, getting shot up before every game. Will was getting shot up before almost every single game, so he was able to even be out there. In the game that he wasn't out there, you know, we talk about, well, an elite-level quarterback should be able to elevate this team. Well, I mean, it doesn't mean that he has to elevate them to be really great, but this Kentucky team without him in the South Carolina game had 40 yards of offense.
Yeah.
I mean, so, like, the team was not good.
Well, and Matt Jones went on with Jared Stillman last week, and I thought it was an excellent interview because, you know, normally, you know, Matt Jones is big-time Kentucky homer.
Yeah.
But I felt like he had legitimate arguments and legitimate reasons, you know, for Will Levis. And he saw it as Kentucky would have been a four-win team without Will Levis. And
40 yards
also,
of offense.
And also the fact is, Will Levis was not supposed to play in that UT game. That's what Matt went on and said. He's like, I don't – like, any other quarterback likely would have not played that game. He just knew that if he didn't play in that game against the Vols, Kentucky was going to lose by 50.
Well, and they
– they still – yes, they still got mollywopped. Don't get me wrong. But he shouldn't have been playing in that game. And I was discussing this with Nick when he was filling in for you this weekend that, you know, he made the post with the Preds jersey basically saying he's going to be number 8. And, you know, all these negative comments that were under it. And I'm just saying, this guy had first-round pedigree at the tail end of 2021. And he gets banged up with his shoulders, broken ribs, turf toe, all the turnover on the coaching staff and personnel-wise. He didn't have to play. He didn't have to play. He didn't have to put himself in that situation, but he did. And he had every single excuse not to. And I look at a guy like Jackson Smith and Jigba, who got drafted as wide receiver 1, who basically, outside of the first game, didn't play at all in 2022.
Jamar Chase.
And flat out, this guy still went out and played for his team, knowing that they weren't going to be as good, knowing he was banged up and injured, and put everything out on the line. And for Titans fans that aren't fans of, you know, Will Levis and didn't like the move, how does that not fire you up that you just drafted a kid that's willing to put his body on the line, risk his draft stock, you know, made himself look a lot worse than the year prior just to go out and fight for his team? And I just think that people should really just sit and consider that, you know, when you have a leader that's willing to put it all on the line to win. It just shocks me how much hate he's getting. I just hate it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, and I know that when I defend him, I sometimes get called a homer, but whatever. I just think that we so often compare college performances to the NFL, which, believe me, tape matters. I mean, Will Levis threw 13 interceptions the year prior, which was one of his best years, so it's still a problem. It's still very much a big problem, and it's something that he needs to fix here in the NFL. But, I mean, guys like Ben Roethlisberger, who played at Miami of Ohio, I mean, he had, like, seasons with 13-plus interceptions, and Josh Allen, they're a big deal, but they also can be fixed. I'm not saying that Will Levis is going to become this franchise quarterback, but I think that the fan base should at least allow him to have a chance on the field. But another guy we're not even talking about and we've completely washed over ever since the NFL draft, Junie, Malik Willis. Malik Willis's quarterback coach had some interesting thoughts on the draft we're going to get to all on the other side. You're listening to Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe today. We got Nick Kieser on the ones and the twos. Join 102.5 The Game for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament presented by Gary Force Acura, benefiting Souls for Souls on June 7th at Hermitage Golf Course. Put your team together and come play with athletes, musicians, other local celebs to support a great cause. I'll be driving around in a golf cart there and have loads of fun. Plus, you'll have a chance to win some awesome prizes. Sign up, play, sponsor, or donate at thegamenational.com/golf. We had a lot of fun last year, Junie. We were driving those golf carts around left and right, and I remember you and Rex Road left me at a hole, and I was like, where are these guys to come back and get me?
Yeah, we were rolling around messing with Robbie, D-Maze, Willie. Like, me and Joe were just having a great time. We were just riding around just
messing
with
taking joy rides everywhere.
I got a major sunburn from that. That was the only downfall of that day. The golf course at Hermitage is great. I love, what do they have, like the lambs or the...
The goats.
They're goats.
No, sheep. Black sheeps.
Black sheeps. Well, they have the horns, so, like, I don't know. They kind of look like a ram, but, you know... Farm animals, who knows? But
who knows?
Great place, cool place. You definitely want to sign up and go to that golf tournament.
Junie, before we get to the Malik Willis conversation, I want to get to a text on the text line. Doug and Franklin on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Morning, everybody. What if the season does not go well and you end up with one of the top two draft picks? Would that create a dilemma if Will Levis either doesn't play well or doesn't play at all? So I guess essentially what he's saying is, say you still have, you know, Ryan Tannehill, the season starts going south, losing multiple games, then maybe they make a mid-season switch and allow Will to start some games, but are clearly out of a playoff spot and are clearly one of the worst teams in the league. What would that look like if Tennessee was a team that was in the one of the top two draft picks? I mean, we saw it with the Bears this year. They knew more of what they had from Justin Fields because he took a big leap from year one to year two, and they believed that that was their guy. But I think it is interesting, but, you know, I personally look at that situation and think, okay, well, you'll know what you have in Will Levis by then, and you already have built around him before he even needs to be your starter. The way I look at it is you don't want to go another year with resetting your quarterback clock and losing. I would just collect the draft capital because it's clear that teams are already, you know, tanking to try and get one of those guys. I mean, when the Washington Commanders, Sam Howell's our quarterback, or Baker.
He did play really, really well against the Cowboys.
He did. But, you know, that's a team that I look at of, okay, they're trying to get the guy of the future. And
wouldn't it suck for one of those guys to go to Washington with all that talent and what they do with quarterbacks? Like, I know we have an intern back there right now that's a Washington fan, but I mean,
Brandon, our intern, is quite the Commanders fan.
If Drake May or Caleb Williams went to the Washington Commanders, I would
But to the Texas point quickly, you know, if they were to get that, would they draft one of the guys who are supposed to be, you know, elite, incredible? We're talking about them this year's draft class on how, you know, they're better than any of the prospects this year. We're already looking ahead to 2024. Or do you, you know, trade out of that and collect the draft capital, which is the option that I look at? Because, I mean, they don't have a lot of draft capital just based off of, you know, previous moves between, you know, the Julio Jones move, moving up to get Will Levis this year, right? They don't have a lot of capital, and they need to collect it.
Definitely agree with you. I'm looking at their draft picks next year. They have their first and second.
Okay.
They traded their third to Arizona to move up for the Will Levis pick.
This year.
They have their fourth. They do not have their fifth and sixth. They traded their fifth last year to go out and get Dennis Daly. And then they traded their sixth.
That one hurt hard for fans listening.
Yes. And then they traded their sixth to the Eagles for Ugo Amadi.
Who's not on the team anymore.
Yes. So right now,
actually, I think he won a Super Bowl with the Chiefs.
It's looking a little bleak, really, because, I mean, you're talking about only having really your first, second, and fourth for premium picks. You don't have your fifth and sixth or third, and it's just like, how are you going to rebuild this team up without draft capital? And I think that if the Titans were to be in a position for a top two pick, the load you would get out for that.
I mean, look at this year.
And let's say Will Levis does get into the mix this season. You know, is the offensive line, is the lack of receivers, is all these things also going to play a part of that? Like, can you really judge Will Levis if the surrounding cast around him, let's say that the only receiver that really has a lot of production this year is Treylon Burks and Chig, and there's just no depth behind that? That's going to seriously limit this offense. Let's say that, you know, the offensive line doesn't pan out with the hope that the Titans, you know, wish it does. I really think that could hinder, you know, any quarterback's play, whether it's Ryan Tannehill or Will Levis. So you're talking about getting multiple first and second round picks to move up in a draft like this, because the price is going to be higher to trade up. Like, Carolina trading up with the Bears for this year's first round pick is not going to be the same price as it'll be for how highly anticipated these quarterbacks coming in next year will be. So you're talking about a bigger haul. And I think that is more important to build for the Titans going forward and giving Will Levis more of a chance to develop with the supporting cast around him.
Well, and, you know, maybe that's how you get a a receiver, an elite receiver. Look at the Bears with DJ Moore. We'll see how that pans out with their young quarterback and Justin Fields. Sometimes getting a piece like that can be the difference maker.
And what happened? And what happened with Josh Allen?
When he got
Josh Allen got Stephon Diggs in his third year as he was slowly progressing, and that took him over the top. When you get a guy and you see him progress and he has the traits, you go out and build around him to really enhance those traits and have that talent to get the most out of your quarterback. And I think that 1 year, like, this isn't going to be Josh Rosen. I'm sorry. Will Levis has a lot more upside and a lot more grit, a lot more grind, and willingness to want to play and be a franchise quarterback than Josh Rosen.
So what does all this mean? You said Josh Rosen, Josh Allen. What does all this mean in regards to Malik Willis? Hour number two coming up on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.